a brief review. Our first lesson had to do with attributes and names of God. Second, with the first incommunicable attribute, God's independence. Third, God's immutability, the fact that he changes not. Last week, his eternity, which is his infinity relating to time. One quick point. Do you know why I asked and made a point of saying there were not any decrees of God, plural, but only one decree? It has to relate to the eternity. If there was more than one decree, are there five decrees?
No, turn the blackboard.
Oh, okay.
Some can't see.
How about that? Better? Okay, if there were more than one decree, they would have to be in order. There would have to be a sequence or a succession of decrees. This has been a point of great debate in the Christian community. For instance, there is two views of Calvinism. There's what we call sublapsarian, and I'll tell you what that means, and supralapsarian. Now, lapse, you know what a lapse is, when you have a lapse? Well, that applies when you lose something or you blow it. In any case, the lapse in lapsarian is the fall of Adam. Lapsarian has to do with the fall. Lapsarian. Well, the whole issue of a sublapsarian versus a superlapsarian is, did God first decree the fall and then decree to save Adam? Or did he first decree to save Adam and then decree Adam to fall? In other words, the whole issue is the order of the decrees. But in God, there is no such thing as succession of moments. Therefore, all the decrees are actually one single decree. They're simultaneous. And this whole gigantic debate, which raged for at least four centuries, was pointless. It was forgetfulness of something very basic about God that could have saved them lots of paper and writing and heated argumentation. On top of which, having to learn two big words. So, we can see that when we think straight and we get God's basic premises down, how he actually is in his essence, we avoid lots of conflict. Now, our lesson today begins with, it's a double word now, because they're basically the same thing, but they're slightly different, and it's important in the sense they're different. Immensity / omnipresence. And we'll have to define terms. Immense. Mense is for the word to measure. Im here is not, negates it. God is not measurable. Can't take a meter stick or a yardstick and go out there and measure God and find out exactly how long he is.
That's why the astronaut couldn't see him in the stratosphere.
That's right. The cosmonaut of the Soviet Union said, don't see him anywhere. So this has to do with his immeasurableness. Because he's unmeasurable, then that means that he is beyond all measure, all limitation of space and time. Immensity. Omnipresence is similar to it, but has a distinctive difference. Omni means, in this sense, everywhere present. He is everywhere. He is immeasurable in that he is everywhere. Immeasurable and everywhere. Now, this seems like they're pretty similar, and they always have to be treated as a unit, but we find that the ideas that they embody have tremendous repercussions and have yielded two giant areas, actually four, the four basic areas in discussion of God. Because if God is immense, then we must say that he is, and we're going to learn some new words here, and we're going to define them, transcendent, which means that he is above and beyond the universe, above and beyond the world. above and beyond. But if he is omnipresent, which means he is present everywhere, then he is, here's your next big word, immanent, which means he is indwelling or abides in the universe. Or abides in. Abides in is Noah Webster's form, and I like it. Abides in it, in every point in it. Immanent, transcendent. Now, Christianity holds to both. What happens? Does everyone have this down on their paper? Because I'm going to have to erase this and put another chart up. No. Okay, I want to... Immanent. And, of course, there's the noun is immanence. Just like transcendence.
That's the same thing they apply to the Pope or something. They say you're imminent.
No, that's imminent.
Oh, is that imminent? Okay.
Interestingly, the Lord has imminence, but it's called supereminence. Over against the Pope's imminence.
So what does that one mean?
Supereminence?
No, just eminent.
Oh, eminence? It merely has to do with preeminence, for example, being first in all things.
Okay.
Eminent.
Superior or something?
Yeah, excellency,
it's
but supereminence.
Station, isn't it?
Yes.
Status.
Mm-hmm. Oh, eminent one, in other words, by virtue of his stature and nature. Mm-hmm. Is this all down now? Everyone have it? Okay. I'm going to put a little chart on the board, which will once and for all clarify these categories. How our view of God is. God is, and I'm going to make my chart. God is, here's under transcendent. Here's immanent. And here is your view. If you say that God is no, not transcendent, no, not immanent, you are an atheist. And you will drink damnation on yourself when you partake of the Lord's Supper here. So, that is the atheist. He does not believe that God is either beyond the universe or that he is in the universe. If you believe that God is transcendent, yes, he is beyond the universe. But no, he does not indwell the universe. You are a deist. Like Jefferson or Franklin. Thomas Jefferson held to this view. And Benjamin Franklin held to this view. Qualified, there's evidence that they didn't consistently hold to this view. That they might have changed in their later life, particularly
Jefferson,
Franklin.
Jefferson is a little bit more consistent than
right.
Franklin.
So this is a deist because, and I'm going to discuss this when we get to Job 22. We've always heard this phrase, deism. We want to know exactly where it comes from in their view of God. Well, they basically think that God exists. Yes, he is there. But he's not here now in our lives. Where's the problem with that? If they say God is only beyond, what happens to Jesus? Jesus couldn't have walked around 2,000 years ago and died on the cross because God is beyond. He's not in.
He could not have been God.
So if Jesus couldn't have been God... But they do hold to the existence of God. They just put him way out left base. Some ideas along this line are represented in Newton's Principia. Some unguarded statements, I would call them. All right, now, next view. God is not beyond the universe, but he's definitely indwelling in the universe. What do we have here? Pantheism. The root of all your Eastern religions. What that means is that since God is not beyond, but God is in, then everything you see is God. That's God. That lamp is God. This carpet is God. And you just breathe and live God. But God is not something above and beyond. He is merely indwelling.
That's inherently behind a lot of Western thought, too.
Yes.
The Greeks were pantheists.
That's right.
Animist.
That's exactly.
Several words have been used for that.
This is probably the largest strain of thought. One of the problems is that if God was transcendent, he would be higher than, obviously higher than man. But since God is merely all there is, then obviously you can get a handle on it, because you can see the stars in the heavens and the carpet and the sofa and all of these things which are God.
Hodge maintains in his systematic theology that mysticism, he calls it, you've named it pantheism there, is the logical religion apart from revelation.
That's right. Basically, it's image of God.
It's where the foolishness of men will take you.
That's right. So that would be pantheism. Pan meaning all things being God. Everything you see is, in fact, God. But God is not beyond everything. Because then there would be a standard, a higher standard, to which the whole universe... Also, this denies the creator. How can the... in other words, the universe, which is God, would have had to create himself. The Christian view, and we'll support it from Scripture briefly, is a big fat yes to both. And then we have Christianity. Truth. First off, we establish God is above and beyond, without which he couldn't be immutable, independent, eternal, or omnipresent. He is everywhere, but he's also beyond everywhere. God is transcendent. He's beyond and above his creation. At the same time, he indwells every little square cubic inch of it with his whole being. Everyone have this chart down, because it's a helpful chart. Yes.
The first three effectually do away with any accountability to God.
That's right.
It seems to be they're heading in the same direction.
Sure, because if God is far away, and we'll see this in Job 22, he doesn't care about what's going on down here, and you're not accountable because, matter of fact, in Job 22 it says he can't even see you. The clouds separate him from us. So don't worry about him. And if he's not beyond, and there's no standard to which man's accountable except what he sees with his own two eyes and his own moral inklings, if you will, crippled as they are. Okay, I love this chart because in it we get, just discussing the one attribute, we can cover a large amount of ground seeing the tremendous errors that multiply.
Where would the agnostic fit on that chart?
I don't know.
He fits on the last one. There's a general category. The last two form the general category of theists. Not all theists are Christians.
That's true. Now we're going to examine the scriptures, substantiate the idea of God's omnipresence and his immensity. We'll start with 1 Kings 8:27. Yeah, 8:27 in 1 Kings. They just built a temple. And notice the proper attitude they took to this little house of stone that they built for God. But will God indeed dwell on the earth? Behold, the heaven and heaven of heavens cannot contain thee. How much less this house that I have builded? The heaven of the heavens cannot contain God. What happens when you contain God? If you can put God in something, even if it's something as big as the heavens, you put a limit on him. You put a limit on his perfections. You see. Because then you've defined his position. You've circumscribed him and say, God's in here. But he's not out here. Well, that's wrong. The heavens of heavens cannot contain him because he created them. He was there before they were. So we have to begin to talk about his immensity, the fact that he cannot be measured, that he's beyond all points. There's a song we sing, surely the presence of the Lord is in this place. And there's this famous scripture, where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I also in their midst. Here's a group meeting here. We're singing this song and preaching on the scripture. But 300 miles away, another church is saying, Jesus Christ is in our midst. Is Jesus fully here at the same time he is fully there at that other church, or halfway around the globe? Or do we get, he says, there's 300,000 congregations, so each one of us gets 1/300,000th of Jesus. New. Right. What is the proper view? Each of us has all of him. What actually, this is strange, but it's something we have to understand, that by God's omnipresence, his being everywhere at all points, It's not the same thing as a material body like we have. Not the same thing. For instance, I'm standing at this place with my shoes in this location. John could not actually stand here at the same place with his shoes where my shoes are now, because my presence excludes his being at the same spot. He can be close to me, but he can't be actually here with me. You cannot get 500 people into a Volkswagen kind of thing. Well, God does not have that limitation. Because God is, one of the things we're going to talk about is he's spirit. He is a spirit, not flesh and bones. And spirit is different. How so? Remember the story about the man who was demon-possessed, and they cast out the demon. The demon floated through and came back with seven more worse than his first, and they took up the same residence. Well, first you had one demon in the man, and now you have eight demons. Obviously, more than one demon can fit in the man and fully inhabit the man, and they do not exclude each other's presence. One demon, when asked his name, said, "My name is Legion," for there were many in the man. So obviously you can have a multitude of spirits in one place. How much more the fullness of the Spirit of God indwelling the entire universe? So at every single point, like the top of this thing right here, God is 100% right there. All of him is right there. Not part of him, not his toe, not his eyelash, humanly speaking, but all of him at every point. Because God is not like material body. Neither that God... When we want to be everywhere, say I want to reach from that wall to that wall, I have to really stretch, I'll never make it. Well, God can reach, but he doesn't have to stretch. He is there already by virtue of his nature. So there's no stretching with God, or extending, or pulling, or moving his arm. He's already there fully in his being, because he is not like us. Let's turn to Jeremiah 23.
I'm sorry, what was the first?
Jeremiah 23, verses 23 and 24. Now remember, we just read from Kings that the heaven of heavens cannot contain God. That is, heavens do not exhaust his size, or his being. Here in Jeremiah it says, "Am I a God at hand, saith the Lord, and not a God afar off?" Notice the contrast between immanence and transcendence. "Can any hide himself in secret places, that I shall not see him, saith the Lord? Do not I fill heaven and earth, saith the Lord?" So God does fill the heavens and the earth, but we don't limit it to that, because they cannot contain him. We have to keep both points in view. If we just take Jeremiah, we might slip into pantheism. Oh, he fills heaven and earth. A pantheist will have no trouble with this. Some, you know, a Buddhist and Einstein and all these other mystics will not have any problem with this verse. They'll say, oh yes, God fills everything, but that's all there is. What you see is what you get. There is no God beyond. Well, of course, First Kings tells us very plainly that heaven and earth does not contain him, is beyond that category. Let's look at another verse. Ephesians 1:23. Establishing once again the omnipresence of God. We can start with verse 22. Well, actually, we can start with verse 21, describing Christ. "Far above all principality," and here's your transcendence, "far above all principality and power and might and dominion," Ephesians 1:21, "and every name that is named, not only in this world, but also in that which is to come, and hath put all things under his feet, and gave him to be the head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him," the fullness of the Father, "that filleth all in all." That's a description of God. He who fills all in all. Now, you can't get more plain than that. God is everywhere. He fills everything and all things. Okay. Reach out. A minute, and I'll need to leave. Alrighty. Psalm 139. is probably one of the best sources of information on God's omnipresence. I recommend verses 7 through 12, and I'll read them. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee. Oh, if I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. God is everywhere. There's no place that you can get away from his presence. In Acts 17, verses 27, 28, the same thought expressed. In him we live and move and have our being. Apart from him, you can't. If you had a God-o-meter, there's such a thing, it would always point to 100% God no matter where you pointed it. This is one of the reasons that the heathen are without excuse, because God is present in everything they see. He is there, and they're looking square at him in the face every time they look. Not in the sense the pantheist means it, but in the sense the scriptures mean it. Final scripture would be Job 22. Verses 12 through 14. Is not God in the height of heaven? Now here's a heresy going to come up here. And behold the height of the stars, how high are they? He says, isn't God live way, way up there? And look how high and far away way up there is. And thou sayest, how doth God know? Can he judge through the dark cloud? Thick clouds are a covering to him that he seeth not, and he walketh in the circuit of heaven. Ah, see, here is transcendence taken a step too far. God is so far, way up there. How can he see what's going on down here, especially with the clouds in between? Wrong, wrong, wrong. God is just as truly here in this room with us today. In every point of space, he is 100% there, because he is not like a material object. He is spirit, and he dwells and fills all in all. That means, one of the practical applications, is that in whatever we do, when Jesus says, lo, I am with you, even unto the end of the world, he means it. It's in his nature. He cannot deny himself. So his promises are sure, because he is here. He's not afar off, unless we're wicked. Then, of course, he turns his face from us. But to those with a contrite heart and a spirit, he is near and be called on. And it's because we can have that hope that God is in fact here with each and every one of us. We move in and through him, that the assurance of the promise is there. And that is the hope that we have. It's a ground of the hope. And without God, we're not omnipresent. He cannot act where he isn't. If God is not out behind that door, then God can't do anything out behind that door, because he's not there. He has to be there to act. Just like if God doesn't exist between the year 1921 and 1923, didn't happen to exist in that period of time, he couldn't do anything during those years, because he isn't there, time-wise. Well, if he isn't somewhere space-wise, he can't do anything there. But he can
hold it all together, either.
Right. Right, exactly. Good point. His being and his omnipresence and his immensity is the ground and foundation for the actual existence of the universe. That is why the universe cannot contain him. How could it be? Because he made it himself. He existed prior to its being. All right, I'm going to need to run. I'm sorry.